Okay, so you've spent most of your life so far focused on pretty much one thing, your sport, going as far as you can with it, and it's so all-consuming that you don't want to think about much else, really. There'll be lots of those sorts competing at the Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast, and of course we wish them all the very best. But while they're right now on the upward slope towards peak performance, what's life like on the other side of that? There's a trio of Australian cricketers right now considering their futures. So when your competitive days are over, whether that is your choice or you're forced to stop because of injury or ignominy, how do you construct a new life for yourself? Garode Towey is a former world champion rower and three-time Olympian. He competed for Ireland. He's now based in Australia. Garode, when did you start competitive rowing and how many years did you devote to it?
I started competitive rowing when I was about 12 years old, and I stopped when I was 31. So I basically committed about, I'd say from the age of 15 to 31, I was pretty much at it, kind of hardcore, you know.
So it was, 15 to 20, nearly 20 years, it was the major focus of your life. Now, while you were competing, you did study, you got a degree in a science degree, I think. What drove you to do that?
I think it's because of rowing, because it's a sport that, there's not a lot of money in it, or there's no money in it. And we were always told from the beginning, look, try and take care of your future after rowing, because, you're not going to have any money. You might actually end up your career in debt. So that was always hammered home to us, like from an early age. So we did actually, I think most of us got our degrees before we finished. And the guy I rowed with got a medicine degree while he was still competing in rowing. So that was kind of definitely something that was in our heads, looking right from the beginning, really,
So you had another string to your bow, or I don't know what the proper rowing analogy for that would be. But you retired at 31, and that was after the Beijing Olympic Games.
That's
in
right,
2009.
Yep.
So what happened next for you? Did you pursue a science career?
I didn't, because I actually did a degree because I was just ticking a box, and really I had no interest in doing anything in science after the second year, but I just finished a degree because I felt I had to do it. I actually went from rowing into the creative arts. I became an actor for a while. I actually went to drama school in London because I felt like when I was finished with rowing that it was sort of, I was at a stage where I was doing all this training but making kind of little improvement. I felt that all my creativeness was kind of gone. And so I was kind of, I wanted to get into something that was to do with kind of the creative arts. And so I got into drama school in London. I did that for a while. I loved it because I was just learning stuff, for the first time, or kind of learning new stuff like every day. And then, essentially I finished that and kind of realized that if I wanted to be a really good actor, I had to be like an Olympic level if I wanted to even get on the stage in London.
Another extremely difficult career to make a living out of.
Exactly. And I guess it was the same as rowing in a way, because you had this kind of project you kind of built up for this kind of performance, and then you gave the performance, and then you had to kind of go down and build back up again. So, I mean, the rhythm suited me, but I just didn't want to devote my life 100% to something else, straight away. And so I kind of opted out of acting. And then that's when I had the question, okay, so what am I going to do now? And actually that question was quite hard and I couldn't answer it. And so that was when I first started to think that this athlete transition stuff was a bit of an issue. And then I started to look around at friends. I started to look around at people who are in sport. And I realized that kind of what I was going through and what I was thinking was very much just a tip of the iceberg, and that some people were really, really struggling.
And was it surprising to you to find that you weren't the only one who was struggling with that transition?
Well, what was surprising to me was the fact that I was struggling a little bit, but there was people struggling an awful lot. I mean, there was people, there was suicides. I mean, like, I started reading about the topic and started reading about, like Olympians who have committed suicide, and it was like over 100 since 1942. Stuff like this that was quite shocking. And then just kind of looking around my own kind of circle and seeing that there was people struggling, but not being able to kind of ask for help, or because it's not programmed, like as a sports person, you're not really programmed to ask for help a lot. You kind of just grin and bear it. And so grinning and bearing it in this situation isn't the way to go. Reaching out for help is the thing to do. And I guess, athletes just aren't programmed to do that.
Dr. Jean Moyle also joins us now. She's a sports psychologist and professor at Queensland University of Technology. Jean, you work with the Australian Winter Olympic team also. And does what Garode is saying sound familiar to you in relation to athletes you've worked with?
Look, absolutely. What's interesting, probably the reverse happened for me personally, in that I went from ballet and performing arts into sport psychology.
You were a ballet dancer with the Queensland Ballet and the Australian Ballet Dancers Company.
That's correct.
So you must have faced similar difficulties because, you know, dance like sport is a short career based on physical prowess.
It is, and I think that for me, you know, where I had an idea that sport and exercise psychology was something that I wanted to go into after I stopped dancing, I mean, what's been interesting in working across, you know, elite sport and performing arts is that they're very similar. It's exactly the same in terms of the challenges that the athletes or performing artists actually face. And
what are the challenges?
When you've been doing something that you love and from such a young age, there's a real key challenge in terms of the investment of your identity. And so, you know, what am I now? If I'm not Jean the dancer, I'm not Jean the athlete, I'm just Jean. What does that actually mean to me? And the length of time that you've actually been investing in what it is that you've been doing on that sole focus, whilst, you know, people are encouraged to study or to explore other things, you know, that can be whether you're choosing to transition or not. It still is a challenge that people face around, well, who am I now? What interests me enough? Like, sometimes I haven't had enough time to explore what that is, and what's going to fulfill me or satisfy me in the same way.
And Jean, what about if you're forced to stop before your time's really up because of injury? I mean, it must be worse in those cases, surely.
Look, it is. I think from the athletes or the dancers in this instance that I've worked with, where you don't feel that you have control over that, that's a really, really challenging scenario or situation to be in. And whether that's injury or, you know, a deselection or a whole range of things like you mentioned in terms of the cricketers at the moment, that's probably it's challenging enough as it is, yet when it's forced upon you and you might not be as prepared for it, you don't feel like you've had any say in it, that can psychologically be exceptionally difficult.
Garode, do you reckon your ability to walk away and move on with relative ease depends on your level of success in your sport, or at least feeling like you did well, did your best, achieved something?
Yeah, I think that's one of the big challenges for athletes. I think a lot of athletes retire having not kind of reconciled what they've achieved or what they haven't achieved, and lots of athletes retire with a certain amount of maybe bitterness or kind of resentment towards what might have happened. Like, it might have been a poor selection decision that they found that they were kind of put on the outer when they shouldn't have been, and they haven't had the conversation with the coach or the selectors to kind of get to the bottom of why they were dropped. So there's lots of unanswered questions, I think, for athletes, and I think that's one of the chief reasons why they struggle afterwards in terms of, you know, coming to terms with what they didn't or didn't achieve. So in terms of, you know, having that conversation with the coach, or the coach having that conversation with the athlete, to make sure that, you know, they're leaving on good terms and they're leaving with the understanding of why they've actually been dropped or why they've been deselected.
Well, Garode, for you, can you describe what that sort of identity crisis, whether it was a big one or a small one? I think it wasn't too serious in your case, but nevertheless, what it was like for you when you stopped rowing, when you weren't, you know, Garode the rower anymore?
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, as you know, from the age of 12 when I started, you know, like, even in school, if somebody asked me what I was doing, I'd say I'm a rower. And that continued right through until you're 31. So you can say, like, I'm an Olympic rower, I'm preparing for this. So it was a very good answer to a question, because you were actually, you know, you're on purpose. You know, you're someone who had this kind of audacious goal and people respected you for it. So, you know, to answer that question about who are you and what do you do, it was a very proud thing to do, you know. But then when you finish, when you don't have the answer to that question at the age of 31 or 32, it's actually quite shocking. That was the bit for me that I found was the hardest. Like, so if someone asked me what I did, I didn't have an answer for them. And I didn't have an answer for myself either. So that was the kind of the hardest bit. So that in itself, you feel a certain level of, I guess, insecurity around yourself. And I guess, you know, the less you have in terms of like an identity outside of your sport, the harder that question is going to be. And I mean, kind of deeper that you have to delve in order to find that purpose going forward. And if you haven't done it, you know, like enjoying your career. I mean, like now I kind of look at athletes, you know, and I say, God, you should really be doing this. Why aren't you doing it? But it's very hard to tell an athlete what they're going to feel like when they retire. They have to, I mean, some of them just have to experience it. And some athletes are going after this at the moment. I mean, they are doing stuff alongside their sport and are doing both very successfully. And that's kind of the gold standard, really. The gold standard isn't about just winning medals. It's about what you're doing alongside your sport as well. And so, like, I consider, like, a lot of athletes now who aren't doing something outside of sport, I mean, they should really be doing it. I mean, there's no excuse not to be doing it. And it's kind of being a bit reckless with their own future, you know?
Here in Life Matters, a discussion about the afterlife of athletes. The Commonwealth Games may be just about to start, but we're talking about life after sport, how you redefine your life and purpose. With Garode Towie, who's a former Olympic rower, he's also founded an organisation that does offer support to athletes facing these big life changes. We'll hear more about that in just a moment. Also, Jean Moyle, who's a sports psychologist. And, you know, I'm curious to ask you too about how you may have responded and coped when a very big door has closed for you, when you've had to give up something you love doing. How have you reset your compass? Doesn't have to be sport, could be anything. Let's know on Facebook. Jean Moyle, what sort of support do athletes need as they come to the end of their competitive careers, do you reckon?
Look, I think the support needs to be happening along the way. Just as been said, you know, how am I actually exploring and thinking about what are the other things that interest me? Sometimes it's that you've been so set on this one particular sport or one particular direction that you've got blinkers on, and often that investment is required to achieve, you know, at high levels. So I think that that support in from a psychological perspective is encouraging people to be thinking or exploring those other aspects of their personality or their interests or their passions. But as it gets closer and as you're moving up through the developmental ranks into kind of the elite levels of sport, that integration of you going to have to prepare potentially for non-selection or dealing with injury, and all of those scenarios and situations could potentially develop into or present themselves as, this is now my transition conversation. And I think it's those emotional aspects of the ability to, how am I going to cope with this? What is it that I'm interested in doing, and the time to take to explore that, as well as preparing myself for, just as been said, you know, I might not achieve exactly what I wanted to achieve out of my sporting career. So what's my definition of success?
Jean, is there then more awareness, do you think, of this within sports organisations in Australia these days?
Look, I think there is. I think there's been many programs previously, the Athlete Career and Education Program through the National and State Sporting Institutes, which is now Performance Excellence, the National Sporting Organisations, with a significant change in the way that sport was funded in Australia a couple of years ago. It's very clearly a topic area. But just like with everything else, when programs are focused on supporting athletes, they're supporting athletes to perform as best they can and achieve what their KPIs are, which usually mean, you know, top one, two or three, meaning that, you know, what are the medals that they're going to if that's the sport that they're in, or what are the competitions or tests or things like that. I think there is an added focus, and certainly some professional codes of sport in Australia. It's very much ingrained in light of encouraging and ensuring or contractually requiring people to study or do some kind of other training outside of their sport to best prepare them. So it's very clearly recognised. However, we're still dealing with individual people and individual situations, that some people will cope with it better than others. Some people don't even want to think about what that next career is. It's a little bit too challenging or difficult. So I think there's still a bit of a way to go, but it's certainly a key topic area that people recognise is really critical.
And as we heard Garode say too, Jean, you know, I mean, he was studying for a degree while he was rowing, but not really, you know, that serious about it. I mean, was doing it because he was told he needed to do something. But, you know, it is hard, I think, to get young athletes themselves to think about this. I mean, it's like thinking about superannuation when you're in your 20s. You just, you know, it's too far away. You don't care.
It is. And I think that's one of the things that I've picked up in some of the research studies that I've done on this kind of topic is that, you know, if you've just made a squad, a program at a national level, an Olympic team, you know, it's almost like in talking to the younger athletes at that level, it's kind of like, well, they've just got there. Like they've just, in a sense, made it to kind of the beginning of the level at which they wanted to achieve. And so thinking about what those next steps are sometimes can be, they're just not interested in that. It's like, I need to put everything into this. And I think a lot of different organizations, programs, sometimes utilize though the older athletes being able to mentor or support, you know, those younger athletes around, well, how can you best prepare for life after, depending upon when that is, and that the culture is supportive of that. Yet at the same time, you know, again, it comes down to that individual choices that I might know that that's what I need to do, but actually it's either too difficult for me, I'm not interested, or too challenging, or I'm just completely unsure about it.
Well, Garode, you founded an organisation called Crossing the Line. What does it do?
So Crossing the Line, I started basically on the back of, you know, myself back in 2009 going online, expecting to find something like a Beyond Blue for sports people that would explain something to me, or would I be able to read stories about other athletes who were kind of going through something similar. And I just didn't find anything back then. That was, you know, 10 years ago now. So life is a bit different now. But in terms of, you know, I wanted to create something that was like Beyond Blue for sports people. So we started off with a website first and foremost, which has athlete stories, it has resources, it has kind of information for athletes specifically on transition and mental health. We run personal development programs on top of that, focusing on mental health and career development. That's with our current athletes as well as transitioning athletes. And we run monthly webinars, and we organize annual summits, so based around, again, mental health and career development and life after sport. So it's a very kind of it's morphed over time. So it started with a website, and now we're actually a fully fledged kind of independent organization. And now one of the things that we feel is our strength in terms of kind of kind of counteracting that kind of element of, say, like athletes said they mightn't trust, you know, speaking to a psychologist who's like within the system because they feel like that maybe the psychologist is going to go back and speak to their coach about their problems.
You can be independent on that.
Exactly. Yeah. We're independent about that, so we can offer that independence. Just like another extra layer of support for them, really, rather than trying to take over, you know.
It sounds good. Garode Towey is a 3-time Olympian. Rowing was his sport, and he's the founder of Crossing the Line. This is this organisation that supports athletes during their careers and moving to the next stage of a new career. And Dr. Jean Moyle is a sports psychologist, a former ballet dancer who's worked also with Australia's Winter Olympics team. Thank you, Jean, and thanks, Garode, for joining us here in Life Matters. Good to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Amanda.
And do let us know how you've dealt with having to give up doing something you love too, an activity that you found so absorbing and meaningful in your life. Has it been a case of when one door closes, ... Post on Facebook at ABC RN Life Matters. You'll find us.